So hey guys, I'm Landon Bartley. I'm the president of the West Michigan Cannabis Guild, a nonprofit advocacy group in town, but we also have a lot of fun events, basically looking out for the cannabis industry in West Michigan. Not only the industry, but if you want to get involved in the industry or eventually get there, or just have questions, or just also an advocate yourself, the Guild is the place to be. Our information is the best places on our website, wmcannabis.org. We cover all of West Michigan, well, a lot of West Michigan, about 17 counties, and are always having fun events. We have bi-monthly member meetings. We often have social events, business networking events, a lot of member events, private, not so private events that you're welcome to come to. It's $25 a year for an individual. It's free for college students, free for industry employees. If your company is an industry partner, they should look at that too. So wmcannabis.org. Thanks for listening.
In this attic, lot going on, but there ain't no need to panic. Come on up and join, we getting wild, getting manic. Spitting truth for all you fanatics. Every week got something new to say. Ain't no filter, this shit coming straight from the brain.
It's coming straight from the brain.
Yeah, it's coming straight from the brain.
All right, folks, I'm here with Landon Bartley.
Yes.
What's up, Landon? Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a great attic.
Yeah, thank you. This is, it's a work in progress, yeah, you know? Yeah. A lot of pot along the way.
All right.
Yeah, good. So Landon, you are the board president of the West Michigan Cannabis Guild.
Yes, I am. Yes.
First off, I thought guilds were reserved for medieval times, you know, so that's...
The Michigan Brewers Guild would disagree with you too.
True.
Guild is, yeah, we've joked about that actually. We said, should we have some sort of medieval theme going on? And I can't speak for the folks that founded the thing a few years ago, but we decided to stick with it. We like it. It's unique, and I think it meets the intent of what we do, which is sort of create a community around cannabis.
Yeah.
A bunch of different, maybe not apprentices these days, but you know, people who are in the industry or want to get into the industry, that's what we do.
So it's a... I don't want to discount what the breadth of it is,
yeah,
but to some degree, it's like a chamber of commerce specific to the cannabis industry. Is that one part of it?
I think that's the direction we're kind of headed. It was started as a political organization, a political advocacy, or I guess a PAC, a political action committee. And then it's sort of morphed over the past few years. We still have the PAC. We still are very strong in political advocacy. That's a sort of core activity,
yeah,
but we've also been talking to our members. You know, with the pandemic, we had a bit of an opportunity to say, hey, do we remake this thing? And so we've been talking to the members about it and prospective members.
Yeah.
And have been hearing a lot of good feedback and people saying, yeah, there is a cannabis community in West Michigan, but it's disorganized. The guild could play a really important role in that sense.
So explain the difference. So what, it's made up of affiliates and members. Is that accurate? Or what makes up the group, I guess?
The group is mostly individual members. We do have business members. We call them industry partners that are licensed cannabis companies. Actually, some non-cannabis companies as well. We have a bank. We have folks interested from insurance or you know, other advocacy groups. It's sort of a big tent. You know, whoever's the common thread is that everyone cares about cannabis. It, to some extent, is tired of the misinformation that's out there and disinformation and wants to be active and wants to just get together with other people that are, you know, understand that cannabis is not a terrible thing, you know, and it's, it's good, you know, it's cool and it's fun. And there's a lot of community around it. So we have that. That's kind of changed too. We have the individual members, we have industry partners, but also industry partners have industry employees.
Yeah.
So with like industry partnership, they get 25 employee memberships free. So
nice.
We have a lot of employees from, especially in town, in Grand Rapids, and then we're starting actually right now, like the next couple of days, we're opening a student membership.
Okay.
We're not really, I wouldn't say we're active trying to recruit students, especially like under 18, you know, or
you're not the middle
under 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just like, hey, there are college kids out here who are, you know, there are some very successful programs getting started in Michigan and elsewhere.
Like agricultural side,
agriculture
business
or business or like, testing of cannabis up at Lake Superior State comes to mind. you know, cannabis science.
Yeah.
And a lot of younger people in college or even younger are recognizing the value of learning about cannabis, learning real information about cannabis, at the college level, the community college level. And so we want to respect that and say, hey, we have an opportunity for you too.
Right.
Come out and, you know, get to know the industry in the area, and things will go much better, hopefully, for job prospects and such after graduation.
Yeah, it's great. I like the brewery, you mentioned the brewing guild earlier, but you know, the brewery industry kind of experienced a similar boom,
sure.
Although that didn't experience a legalization like this. So,
well, not for 100 years.
But. Yeah, right. So when someone joins as a member, just a standard, like if I just want to join.
Yeah.
So what does that afford me, or what kind of access do I get, or what would I do?
I think it's the best deal in town. I mean, it's $25 for a year. I think that's going to have to go up, just because we're trying to really be, well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
Basically, as a member, you get connected. So we have meetings that are, some meetings are members only, some aren't. You get access to a Facebook group. You get access to member meetings that we have bi-monthly at different breweries around town.
Yeah.
We're starting to do meetups in further out places. You know, we're West Michigan Cannabis Guild, not Grand Rapids Cannabis Guild.
Yeah. So what does that entail? That goes all the way to Kalamazoo, St. Joe is all the way down through there?
Yeah. I'd say North End is probably around Big Rapids.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's set in stone, but we try to sort of limit, I mean, we cover 17 counties, right? So
you got to have some scope. You have to have some scope.
So Big Rapids is down to the state line and then about Ionia out to the lake.
Oh, yeah.
So nice. It's a big area. We've had people say, hey, why not Traverse City? Why not Kalkaska? It's like, yeah, you know, we're not going to turn anyone away, but we got to focus our efforts. And that's sort of based politically. Honestly, we looked at district lines and said, we're going to support or at least get involved in political races, understanding campaigns, opt-in campaigns or opt-out campaigns within this area. Let's at least be cognizant of who our elected officials are.
Right.
And because we're going to be supporting them or not.
So obviously, the guild politically... there had to be a huge uphill battle leading into legalization or decriminalization first and legalization. And then now, is there still a fight politically to re-ban it? Is it just more of like who's really for it and who's kind of just neutral on it?
I do think that the political fight has certainly changed. Like you said, decrim back in 2012 here in Grand Rapids, a lot of the folks who were directly responsible for the decrim campaign were the ones who in fact founded the guild. And led and pushed for legalization statewide. It was a big mover and shaker in the 2018 campaign. But the struggle has changed. I wouldn't say there's an effort to reban. I think there's an effort on our part, at least, to get good candidates elected that understand cannabis, understand it's just another industry. Yeah, it has some special sort of circumstances, but a lot of times those circumstances are based on the rules and that the government is creating.
Right.
And so like, oh, this is special because we're calling it special. Sure, you're creating a plant that has impacts, you know, and everyone recognizes that. But I don't think it's a reban as much as let's make sure that rules don't get worse. See if we can make the regulatory landscape a little more consistent, a little more viable. Look at some of these policies that are maybe making it intentionally or not, you know, I should say unintentionally or not, but make it harder to get into the industry or to stay in the industry. There's a lot of false narratives out there. And so as an advocacy group, we do, you know, work with politicians and on campaigns, but we're just trying to get good information out there too.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going uphill against like the prohibition.
Yeah.
It's the horror stories that are just made up, you know, this idea that like it's the devil's lettuce and all that, you know, like I still call it that because I think it's hilarious, but you know,
great salads.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the best salads. Yeah. What are some of the misinformation things out there that like you guys tackle the most or that you kind of face the most?
Yeah. I think, there are so many, you know, I would say it's less about the product itself and more about the industry. We often will talk about with candidates or at meetings, hey guys, the question here isn't, are you going to allow cannabis in your community? Like it's here.
Yeah.
Right. Are you going to allow the licensed industry in your community? And that's the question. And I think that doesn't really come up too much. A lot of times the elected officials' constituents are coming up with concerns. They're saying, I'm worried about my kids having access or getting more access as this industry becomes more widespread. to which we can say, look, it's 21 plus, you know, or if your kid is under 21 and has a significant medical issue, they might be able to be addressed with this, with cannabis.
Yeah.
Maybe consider it, you know, and talk to a doctor about it. And there are doctors out all over the place that are willing to talk about cannabis as a legitimate medicine. Excuse me.
Yeah.
There are doctors all over the place that are okay. And consider cannabis a legitimate medicine.
Yeah. You know? The biggest, this is probably like a little trite, but the biggest knock on the whole like Schedule One thing is that the whole point of being in Schedule One is that it's has no medicinal value. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, this marijuana has been being sold as a medicinal for decades.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And yet it's still on Schedule One. So there's obviously some politics behind all that.
There's a lot of politics. And, you know, I think a lot of elected officials too, you know, it doesn't really matter what the issue is. And maybe I'm mildly jaded from working in government for many years, but politicians are trying to get elected, stay elected, and they won't necessarily talk back to a constituent who's feeding them disinformation as long as they're going, oh yeah, this person's on my side.
They're going to vote for me. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's like, are we stopping cannabis from being sold in our communities? What are we really doing? You know, is it, and we'll say this is about allowing an industry in your community, not cannabis, about allowing tested, safe products in your community.
Right.
And starting to work sort of, I wouldn't say that we're anti black market necessarily, but we're not pro black market. We're really more pro licensed industry, trying to help people get into it. Over time, the illicit market is going to decrease.
Yeah, that's the thing. When things become up and up on the front, then the black market there's no profit there anymore.
But there is still.
To some degree.
And I would say in part because of the regulations and because of the significant costs involved in getting into the industry. With the state legislation a few years ago, the MMFLA, basically the medical industry bill, Marijuana Facilities Licensing Act, that was passed by a legislature that you could tell what their priority was, because they had things like minimum capitalization requirements, where you want to open a provisioning center, you have to have $500,000 in cash ready to go. And you can say, well, does it really going to cost that much?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, right? Or if you want to open a grower, you know, you're going to have so much in cash. You're also going to have an annual fee to the state of, I mean, some of these growers are paying $60,000 per license, and they'll have 10 licenses. I mean, that's a big grow, you know, and that's not really our bread and butter. We're really trying, we work with big growers and small growers, but we're really sort of focused on, hey, let's help people get in the industry and stay in it, regardless of your size.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. We do hear some concerns. Recently, we've been hearing some concerns about high THC products. You know, we take those seriously. And
like you're talking about like concentrates and things of that nature, RSOs.
Well, yes and no. I mean, let's say you see flower at the store that says, you know, the consumer is often going, I think it's a growing pain for the industry, and some consumers tend to look at it and go, well, I want higher THC product no matter what. I personally I feel like it's somewhat similar to alcohol content in a whiskey or something. You go, oh, hey, 100 proof. Yeah. Great. That's going to be some strong stuff, but I'm not going to go out and drink Everclear. So I'm not going to go out and find, you know, 80% THC. Just because I think it's going to be more messed up, that's not the NLB all of this plant. There are a lot of other things. And if you're just focusing on THC just to get the bigger, better high, that doesn't seem to be necessarily playing out.
Yeah.
I do hear some flack about that from the industry saying, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you speaking out against this? Our customers want high THC. But I think that, we're seeing some studies that I still want to vet them, make sure they're true, but it's like if a very high THC product is going to lead to potentially harmful effects on the user, yeah, we want to know about that. And a lot of folks in the industry that I know are also going, yeah, we don't want to be causing people problems. You know, cannabis is a great thing. Let's not make it a bad thing.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. And there's so much more value on it. Like, I mean, we're regular users. I have been for years.
Yeah.
But
you should join the guild.
I'm definitely going to join the guild.
All right.
Yeah, we'll do it as the addict. But yeah, I think it's not about just getting fucked up.
Yeah,
you know, it really isn't. If there's a way to do that, you know, and it probably isn't through weed. You know, like the not to mention in my experience, the highest THC products aren't necessarily the ones that make me most give me the most psychoactive byproduct either. I feel like it's some ratio of all the other cannabinoids that are in there.
You talk about the entourage effect, right? What are all these differences, the sort of combination of terpenes and cannabinoids in the plant, you know, and certain combinations might have different effects beyond THC. And there are so many cannabinoids in this plant. Like 100, you know, or 120. I can't remember the number, but there are many.
Yeah. And many of them are medicinal too, right?
Oh, You know? Yeah. And I mean, I have gout, right? Sort of type of arthritis.
That's the disease of kings, by the way.
The disease of kings.
And you're in a guild. So that's right. It's kind of coming closer.
It was meant to be. And I don't have too many symptoms right now, tons of cycles. But when I do, I find that CBD helps with pain. THC seems to either affect it enough that it, I can't quite tell, you know, and I don't want to ascribe,
a doctor, but this is just your own personal experience. Yeah.
Thank you. My anecdotal experience is that the THC actually helps, but it doesn't like, and I'm not trying to take 30% THC, 5 or 10 or 15 might be just fine.
Right.
And it might just be that I'm high enough that I don't care.
Yeah, there's a psychological
might be some of that too.
Yeah.
You know, but I found that it doesn't leave my head as cloudy the next day as my doctor prescribed medicine, which I still have and still use. So I don't know. There's a lot of potential benefits that I think we're just starting to really learn about scientifically, which is why increasing sort of recognition of the plant's value by elected officials is really exciting to me. I mean, we're seeing legislation come through. It seems like someone's introducing a bill every month to try to legalize federally, and it gets shot down.
Yeah.
You know, the Safe Banking Act is getting some legs again. Although I think it could do more for social equity. But
of course,
you know, it's cannabis is moving in the right direction, and more states are legalizing. We just saw North Dakota today got their signatures approved, so they're going to be on the ballot in November. South Dakota's back on the ballot after their politics. Mississippi, Alabama. You know, I should be careful. I know Alabama, you know, was just I need to track this stuff more often. But you know, yeah, I really focus on Michigan. But it's we have like 38, 40 states that are already on board. And most states will allow medical use, or at least decriminalize possession. It's like, there's a reason for that, you know?
It's such a fun time to be,
what a time to be alive.
When were you smoking when you were young, when it was illegal?
Not too much, honestly. You know, I certainly enjoyed it for many years.
Yeah.
I would say I do more now.
Yeah.
And that was mostly because I was I was concerned. I had been fed all the information. I was a dare kid, you know? I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not supposed to touch this stuff or getting anyone who is a terrible person. That was like, I don't know if I was double digits at that point, but I was like, oh wait, hold on. I don't need to listen to this stuff necessarily.
Yeah.
This may not all be accurate. I know stoners who are really cool. I shouldn't say when I was 10, but you know, in high school and stuff, it's like,
yeah,
this is happening. And these people are not the devil, regardless of what lettuce they're eating.
To mention like, I'm a reformed, I wouldn't say a recovering alcoholic, but I drank heavily for a while, like in a party mode. Wasn't a daily drinker, but like I completely cut it off cold turkey, and my marijuana, you know, use has increased since then.
Sure.
But it's just better for at least for me. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't wake up feeling guilty and groggy and on edge, you know, like you do if you drank too much the night before. So like if you're still kind of on the fence, you know, give it a shot, go down to your local dispensary and grab a gummy to start or something, you know.
Absolutely. You can give it a shot, you know, and it's like, I think that's the thing too, is that a lot of people are scared because there's been so much misinformation in the past, you know, and I think that we're seeing licenses, like license types that are coming that are going to really help with that and help people make informed decisions, determine if this is something they enjoy or don't.
Yeah.
Hey, if you don't enjoy it, no one's out there forcing you to smoke or take an edible, you know, just don't buy. So people can go out, and we're excited about these new license types because I was saying, like, you want to make an informed decision, and whether or not you like it or don't like it, that's fine. But we're looking at, for example, the state has a license called Designated Consumption Establishment, Consumption Lounge, right?
Oh, I was going to, that was one of my questions I want to ask you about, what the status is of that process, of that.
I'm aware of two that are licensed in the state. We're going to check one out in Kalkaska next month on a field trip. I'll tell you about that in a sec.
So this is a marijuana bar, folks, basically.
Marijuana bar. Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of restrictions. You can't go actually buy from that establishment.
It's BYOW.
Right. You have to, you can go next door. I mean, I think the one in Kalkaska has a dispensary next door. Probably, I think it's owned by the same people. And that we found, like when I was a city planner, we went out to Denver, looked at that, the only lounge that we were aware of in North America at the time. checked it out, and they said, yeah, this is a business model that's not going to work unless you also have a store as well to keep it afloat.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, these are all sort of growing pains, and it's just the way that the industry rolls out. We're trying to make an industry newly legal, and here's a new license type. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. I'm very optimistic about launches because I think that they'll give people a sort of a safe space to try things. You know, I'll talk to folks who went, oh man, I feel like everyone always has their first edible experience. And that's like their, oh man, the first time I had edible, I didn't know it was happening 2 hours in. So I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, because they took 20 milligrams or something because some friend gave it to them.
By the way, that little cookie I just gave you, it has 25 or 30. So
okay,
watch out when you, when you
I'm
pop
excited
that.
For that. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I talked to people and they're like, have you ever had anything? No, I don't know what dose I should try. Doctors aren't going to tell me what dose I should try. I say, well, try with like 5 mg, maybe 2.5, you know, nothing big, a little edible. You can find them at most stores, or talk to the bud tender, and maybe the bud tender is going to try to upsell you. In my experience, most bud tenders are going to be like, hey man, it's cool. Whatever you want.
Because stoners are cool people. That's
stoners are cool. They're
not
chill.
They're not trying to fuck you off.
They're just hanging out and like, yeah, man, I'm glad that you love this stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you try 2.5 or 5 mg and see how it goes. If you're first time out, you know, don't eat more. If you don't feel like it's working, you know, wait a couple hours and then try another one. If you feel like it didn't do anything. But I mean, my first time I tried way too much, I should say. I had 50. You know, because I was worried about flying across state lines. It was a late night flight.
You didn't want to, you had to get rid of it somehow.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? So I popped 5 all at once, felt myself like fall into the jetway on the way into the plane. I was like, oh shit, something's going on. Turned to my girlfriend. I'm like, why are we flying in circles? She's like, dude, look outside. I look outside. We haven't taken off. So like, I mean, everyone has a story like that.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, do you remember your first time having an edible?
Smoking. The first time I ever... First off, the first time I ever smoked out of a water bong was in college.
Yeah.
And I was with a bunch of experienced potheads.
Yeah.
And it's my turn in the circle, you know. By the way, like marijuana, one of the most fun parts of it is the ritualistic element of it, you know. And so they pack a bowl and they're all excited. I get the greens, you know, the fresh bowl.
Right.
And I put my mouth like over the bong. Like, so.
Party foul.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone's like, what the fuck? And then, so then they corrected me. So I light it. Don't do that. I immediately like. Took a huge hit. I coughed super hard right into the bong. So and someone was like, all right, get this amateur out of here. You know? So that was my kind of first experience, but
it's okay.
Yeah.
But everyone laughed about it, right? You didn't get kicked out of the circle.
No, of course not. I became a fixture of that circle, you know?
Right.
But I know some people that took way too much and got super paranoid.
Yeah.
I know a guy that he's like a high level executive at an auto company. And so he's also in the legal part of it. So he was kind of nervous. He took like half of a 75 milligram thing and he's never done it before. Oof. And he ended up going to Henry Ford Hospital.
Oh man.
And the guy, they put him on an IV and the doctor told him like, look, man, you're just dehydrated. If you ever feel like this again, drink a bunch of water. But all I'm really going to tell you is you're out of here, you know, like enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, that's what the doctor told him. So, you know, it can happen, but folks, the stories of people getting too drunk are, you know, vast compared to what's going on with the weed part.
Yeah.
I think Bill Murray, I just saw a quote yesterday online. It's attributed to Bill Murray online, but I've seen quotes attributed about the internet to Abraham Lincoln online too. But he said, you know, it's interesting that the most dangerous part of marijuana is getting caught with it.
You're right.
You know, and luckily we don't have to deal with that so much in Michigan.
Yeah.
But we know the Brittany Griner story that's making big headlines, you know, and that's an international issue. It's far outside the scope of West Michigan Cannabis Guild.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of other politics mixed into that. But at the same time, there are still people here that are in jail for cannabis.
You said, at least we don't have to worry about that in Michigan. I'm not sure I completely agree. Because you still got to watch out. You know, there's still a limit of what you can carry. You still don't want to be driving with it. You don't want to be driving after you've consumed.
Yeah.
You know, we're still seeing, there's an eye-opening ACLU report. I want to say it was from early 2021.
Mm-hmm.
That said, let's look at the arrest rates for possession of marijuana across the country. They're in legal states too. They're saying they were specifically started seeing some really disturbing trends about black versus white,
of course,
people of color. And they're saying, hey, if you're a black person, you're 3.5 times more likely to get pulled over or arrested for possession of cannabis in Colorado,
yeah,
than you are white. In Montana, it's like 10 times, Kentucky 10 and a half times. It's like, okay, so there are some pretty significant problems that we see with, you know, systemic racism all over the place, but it's still persisting even in states that are legal. So
yeah,
I always sort of
temper that. Yeah,
temper it and say, hey, you know, still exercise caution, still, you know, be careful if you don't own your house, if you don't want to get evicted from your house if your landlord doesn't like weed and you didn't know it.
Yeah.
There are still so many opportunities to get screwed up with on your record and stuff. One thing that I've been really frustrated actually about in Grand Rapids is this ordinance that was passed late 2020. A couple ordinances were passed that were,
they kind of snuck them under the,
they didn't really sneak them in. Well, yeah, they did. You know, the Clean Air in Public Places ordinance had some, I think, some really good sort of intents from the start. You know, they wanted to protect people from secondhand smoke and parks, et cetera.
Yep.
And they sort of, the entire community engagement part was based on, hey, do you want to restrict tobacco smoke in parks? And then at the last minute, yeah, it became marijuana as well. And also edibles. Oh, so no consumption in public places of any kind of cannabis. And I'm like, what are edibles doing in a clean air ordinance? I like clean air as much as everyone does, but I'm like, this is not the right way to regulate this compound,
yeah,
or this plant, you know. And this is, and we're just creating more opportunities for someone to get
jammed up
by, you know, legally or not. You know, even if they say, oh, it's just an infraction, fine. But you know what? In the MMFLA says, if you have an infraction about for a controlled substance, a Schedule I drug, in the last 10 years, even a local infraction, you can't get licensed under this Medical Facilities Licensing Act. And so I'm saying this to the city commission, you know, hey, you guys are trying to this social equity program at the same time that you're causing this, you're bringing on more potential reasons for people not to get in.
And it's a lopsided chance of enforcement if you're a person of color.
Absolutely.
So the long-term effect of that, or in the near term as well, is that you're not going to have any minority-owned pot shops.
Right.
Not to mention from a socioeconomic perspective, it's already going to be hard enough to do for anyone, yeah, let alone someone that's been disadvantaged is going to have a hard time coming up with $500K or whatever it costs. Yeah. You know, it's like...
Well, and so I recently talked to a reporter that was asking about, like, what are social equity policies, what are good ones going to do? And I was thinking, I don't think you need to put the social equity policy on the cannabis industry as much as the banking industry and insurance and all the other systems.
Law enforcement.
I mean, yeah, you know, I that's a fraud topic. But like, it's definitely something you want to consider.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, if we can change the behavior of people in those industries and the rules and how you approach different people trying to get into an industry, maybe we can make things better instead of worse.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a complex thing.
It's very complex.
I can understand why it's not super simple to explain what the guild does. You know, it's like,
and we're just talking about politics. You know, the social events and networking events are, I think, a very increasing part of the guild and what the guild does. I mentioned the Kalkaska. Kalkushka is the cannabis lounge.
Great name.
So we're going up, I want to say September 17th.
All right, I'm going to pause real quick. Hey, what's up, guys? I know Landon talks about this being in mid to late September, this Kalkushka event, but I've since communicated with him. They delayed that event. We'll talk about this field trip to Kalkushka a few more times throughout the episode. It's not going to be September 17th. Keep checking back to wmcannabis.org to find out more. You can also follow them on social medias. All the links are in the show notes. Kalkushka will not be September 17th, but it will be coming up soon. Jessica and I are considering joining that event when it does happen. Stay tuned for more information. Back to Landon.
Smoke and Safari. SmokeandSafari.com. It's Smoke and Safari Saturday. And we're going to take a bus from GR, so you don't have to worry about driving. And a lot of people have been asking, you know, hey,
on the bus?
No smoke on the bus. But you can smoke beforehand. You can eat
edibles in there.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we said to the bus company, absolutely not. We're not going to allow it. Don't worry about it. And they believe us. And our members are cool. And like, we're going to have non-members on the bus too. But we trust them. And, you know,
yeah,
like you're saying, stoners are cool. And even people just want to go. You don't have to be high. You don't have to consume on this thing. We're just going to make it easier so that you can go enjoy this lounge and then come back without not worrying about killing yourself.
Are there still seats on the bus?
There are a few seats. Interesting. There are a few seats.
Okay.
I would say we do expect it to sell out. I think registration's going to end the 14th. So we still have a couple weeks. Yes. In fact, I would say we still have several seats on the bus, many seats available, in fact, right now. But that's only because we just opened registration today.
Yeah, I think that'll be successful. Yeah,
oh, it's going to be a great time. SmokingSafari.com.
So what are you going to check out up there? Just kind of how the model's running? You're going to talk to the owners or what's other than just kind of checking it out?
Yeah, I mean, people, I think, want to know, what does this thing look like? And, oh, there's one 2 hours away and there's one in Detroit area. And that's in large part because many communities haven't opted in to allow them. Grand Rapids has talked about it. In that Clean Air and Public Places ordinance that I mentioned, they have a specific section saying, we'll have an exemption for designated consumption establishments if those ever are legalized.
At least they put a little earmark in there.
But yeah. that was a push, you know. And they also exempted golf courses because of cannabis though, but only tobacco smoking. So if you want to smoke a cigar in your golf cart, that's okay.
Way more offensive. Not to mention, I've been smoking pot on golf courses for 20 years. Stop me, people.
We're also gonna have a golf outing on October 1st. We're calling it Green Means Go because it's our endorsee reception. So one of the political things we do is endorse candidates, contribute to their campaigns. We did several so far this year. We're gonna have several more endorsements coming up. We'll announce at our next member meeting on September 21st. Nice. I'll talk about that too. But
yeah,
the golf outing is going to be fun. We're going to do it at the mines, actually, outside of Grand Rapids.
Yeah, the mines.
We wanted to do it at the city course down at 28th and Kalamazoo, but we couldn't get the clubhouse for that until November. So we still wanted to have it in October.
November. So. That's a rough opening at a golf course.
I don't know golfing then, but I'm not much of a golfer, so we'll see. But our endorsees are going to be there, and we're going to have some. Sort of area VIPs, and I think it's going to be a pretty cool event. So we do a lot of fun stuff like that. We do the field trip, the golf outing. We do member events, or the member meetings, which are typically at breweries, mostly because that's adults only.
Yeah.
And people like it, you know. And we have a good relationship with breweries. You know, there's not competition necessarily. If people want to smoke weed, they're going to smoke weed. If they want to drink beer, they're going to drink beer. And it's like these industries can coexist peacefully, happily together.
Yeah.
All the staff at every brewery were always like, hey, you guys have any extras? Because,
Same person. Yeah.
We have some gifting sometimes that takes place. And so it was a lot of fun. We do networking events, more business focused events. Like we have a speaker series called Cannabis Thought Leaders. It's every quarter that also moves around different, typically breweries and typically speakers talking about like a certain focus topic. Last time we talked about small business. The first time we were talking larger businesses that were sort of grower retailers. Next one on October 25th, that's going to be more like, hey, the industry is not having the best time in Michigan right now. Let's talk about that and talk about these tough choices you're making in the industry and why and how do you sort of stay afloat.
So Craig, help me understand this because the person that told me this could be reliable, but it was just a random person at a dispensary or something. But they told me that when Michigan, because Michigan was kind of like in the second or third wave of states that were legalizing behind mm-hmm. Colorado and California mm-hmm. and Washington. And because of what they saw there and that the big brewing company type vibes are buying a lot of the, you know, basically those other states were really set up to make it the barriers to entry so impossible for the regular Joe mm-hmm. or for the mom and pop.
Okay.
That when Michigan did their licensing or their legalization, that they made extra provisions to make it a little easier to enter the market. Would you agree with that? Comparatively, it may not still be ideal, or is that just bad information I got?
I don't know if it's bad information. I think that generally I agree. I'm not quite sure. I don't know enough about the other states. I've seen what they've done, what's happened sort of to their markets. And we're seeing sort of the similar cycle in Michigan where you have a boom and then have some rougher spots. And I think it's sort of just a difficult market correction.
Well, everyone that ever smoked pot thought they could start one, and then they started it and they realized it's still a business. You still got to run it with a bunch of discipline. Absolutely. There's a lot of security measures. There's a lot of regulatory issues.
A lot more so than you'd expect.
Yeah.
And in fact, we talked about that. We were talking about that with some folks at the MRA or CRA, the state. They were saying, hey, so what are the barriers here and how do we get rid of them? And to their credit, I think especially the outgoing director, Andrew Brisbo, has really been a decent guy, I think, for the industry. I think he sort of gets it.
Yeah.
Too bad he's leaving, and I'm not sure if there's shenanigans there or not, but he was asking about barriers to entry, and I had just spoken with somebody in my previous role as a city planner that said, look, I know how to grow weed, and I know how to grow it really well, but I'm worried about getting into business. So you might want to partner, you know, if you can, yeah. Because yeah, the business side of things is going to be vastly different than the growing side of things. Yeah. It's just two different disciplines. And if you don't know what you're doing with the business, your business isn't going to succeed, right?
Yeah.
You want to set entrepreneurs up for success. And so, but I couldn't send them off to someone like Grow, Grand Rapids Opportunities for Women, or like SCORE, right? The Service Corps of Retired Executives, like these different entrepreneurial support organizations that could normally help somebody out, because a lot of them have federal funding at the basis.
Right.
So they're prohibited.
They can't even touch it.
Can't even touch it. I, in fact, had been working with a SCORE mentor myself. I had been looking at starting a cannabis testing lab. And he said, like, day one, let's call this cow milk testing. Like, I don't know anything about dairy, you know? And yeah. He's like, doesn't matter for your business plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Once we're done, just do a find replace and change cow milk, dairy or whatever to cannabis. And I was like, okay, man, like, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so yeah, it's weird. And there just aren't the same kind of opportunities necessarily for support from other organizations that typically would support an entrepreneur because of that federal status. I think we're seeing that change. And I think people are starting to say, okay, we can perhaps help people get started. But in the absence of that, it seems like there is room, at least in West Michigan, for a group like the Guild to step in and say, hey, if you can't find help elsewhere, maybe we can help you. But I've seen things, yeah, like, you know, business plan competitions or, you know, things like that are less, I guess, that don't rely on federal funding, that can still sort of support canopreneurs.
Yeah,
but canopreneurs. We're getting there.
Yeah,
we're getting
there. That's cool. Yeah, there's a show on Discovery Plus now that's a kind of like a bar rescue show for yeah, dispensaries.
Okay,
and I'm thinking, this is a bad start, just because, you know, it hasn't been around very long, and bars usually struggle for 30 years, you know, before that. So it might just not be the industry for you if that's happening, but partnering with someone that has the business know-how and you can focus on your skill set is what we need to be doing as a culture anyway. It's like, don't try and get spread too thin, get in your lane and figure out. And then maybe once you have the experience and once you have the mentorship from your consultant or your partner, then you can do it on your own some other day. You know,
I hope so. I hope so. There are opportunities. There's a lot of ways to get involved in the industry. If it's not even as a licensed company, you know, there's a lot of support industry out there. You know, people are going to provide the soil or cocoa or worms or what, you know, whatever it might be, or the right water mix or the right,
the grow equipment itself,
the right lights, the right processing equipment, all kinds of things, or figure out how to build a cool, you know, a cool pipe or a cool storage box. I mean, a friend that is actually on the board as well, the Cannabis Guild, she has a company, Rich Smoke, that has basically like safe, secure boxes, so you can store, you can store your weed at home and not worry about your kids getting into it.
Oh yeah,
because you don't want your kids to open the fridge and take the wrong batch of brownies to school. You know, we hear about like horror stories like that. I mean, no one wants kids eating the stuff. I think, that's kind of funny, but it's not, you know, you don't want kids getting messed up. And it's like, shit, that sucks. Wish those guys had taken more care, you know? So I don't know. There's a lot of opportunities to get involved in the industry or around the industry, even if it's not as a licensed company. That said, if someone wants to get involved in the industry, they should be able to. They should have the same opportunities as anyone. And that's where I think that these social equity policies that's mentioned a little bit could help. My concern with those is that too often they sort of put the burden of meeting those social equity commitments on the industry, which makes it harder to get into the industry itself.
Yeah, because the industry isn't necessarily the ones barring it anyway. It's the regulatory side of it.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, and the insurers and the bankers, all the stuff you already mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question about the MMFLA.
Okay.
Why did they spell marijuana with an H?
My understanding is that that's how it was spelled in some legislation back in the 30s.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like they're still using outdated spelling of the shit.
I wish they wouldn't use the term marijuana anyway.
Just cannabis is
I mean, I always use cannabis. The state seems to be doing that. But, you know, in the city of Grand Rapids, when I was there and we were working on the ordinance, we used marijuana with an H because it was matching the state. And we're going, man, why do they have to do that?
Marijuana.
Then they started changing it to a J. So we started changing ours to a J. And I was saying cannabis. I'm like, all right, can we just stick with cannabis?
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You can also say marijuana or hemp, like for parts of the same cannabis plant.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't want to, I think people also need to be aware of too, is that this is a big industry and, you know, consumables are only part of the possible uses of this plant. And on the hemp side, my goodness, I mean, there's so much you could possibly do. You could, yeah, sure, you can extract some cannabinoids and stuff too, but it's like you could grow for fiber or for, you know, the seeds or for the oils or whatever it might be. I mean, fibers, I think it's fascinating to look at some of the stuff. There's regenerative farming that seems to be working really well with hemp, that can help bring your agriculture back and make more sustainable.
Oh, so you like as a grow in your field or whatever, and then you to replenish soil, or
you can like you can rotate it in with other crops and stuff.
Yeah,
You can remediate soil with it. There's a story about the Russian or I guess Soviet government using cannabis to help remediate the soil around Chernobyl before it was Ukraine.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, because it was radioactive and it still is. You know, I don't know how that worked, but it certainly could pull like heavy metals out of the soil, for example, which is why we would want to test because, you know, the cannabis plant is so versatile.
Absorbing some of that stuff. Yeah.
Absorbing stuff if you have bad soil that you want to make sure is out of the product before you sell it to consumers.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we kind of straightened out the marijuana thing. But yeah. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I thought that was
so when I use the terms marijuana, I usually will say, like, I usually say cannabis because the term marijuana has racist origins at least in the States.
Because it has like a Mexican, like a Hispanic, Spanish. Yeah. Is that the Spanish word for it?
Back in the 30s. Oops.
You're good.
Back in the 30s or 40s, that started to be sort of used as a way to scare white Americans and say, oh gosh, look at those Mexicans using this and such.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, are we really doing that still? I think you'll see people in industry or around the industry using marijuana to mean something that has greater than 0.3% THC, right? Okay. So the stuff that could get you high, that's considered sort of, this is the threshold for what should be marijuana versus not marijuana. Needs to be licensed versus hemp, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although hemp has its own licensing scheme, framework and stuff.
And I know people that have had really good success with like some of the salves or like the ointments and things like that. I took when we were at Electric Forest.
Yeah.
We were doing some other psychedelic things, and I put some CBD, like oil, it's like coconut flavored under my tongue, and apparently it's good for anxiety and stuff, you know. Yeah. So like, there's all sorts of uses for it, and it's a natural, you know. Of course, it's souped up now with agricultural improvements and things like that, but it's still a natural thing.
Yep.
You know, so I think the biggest impact that I think it's had, I don't even know if I want to say the biggest impact, but like culturally. I can't believe how fast it went from being the devil's lettuce to like pretty openly accepted. Again, I understand that it's not fully open, you know, but like it kind of is in terms of people openly talking about it, even in illegal states on Facebook. And like, it's definitely changed the thing, which is good because why were we putting any energy to blacklisting something that when used responsibly is a great product?
I don't know if the blacklisting has ever been about responsible use.
Yeah.
I think it's been about politics and othering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you said that because I like your point about how quickly it seems to be changing, how public sentiment seems to be changing. I might argue that it's not really changing as much as just being more open. And you're saying how people are openly okay with it. And I think that's the key word because, like I said earlier, with the cannabis industry, you know, we're not saying you're letting cannabis into your community. It's here. You're letting cannabis industry in the community and let it operate openly, right?
Yeah.
And so people, I think, can now be more open and saying, look, yeah, I've used this stuff for years. At least now I know I'm getting, you know, and I know who I'm getting it from. You know, I can be open. And I think that's a good thing. That's all
just across the board.
All across the board.
Yeah. Having, you know, from a personal experience, when you're not being yourself or being open and you're hiding things, it kind of makes you a dishonest, manipulative person to some degree.
Sure.
And then you have all that other shame. It ends up just being a worse experience in life when you're not owning up to what you're up to, you know?
Yep.
So like even me just saying that I was doing other psychedelics at the Electric Forest, that's not something I would have said probably 2 years ago.
Right.
You know? But I just don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not selling it. I don't have a bunch of it here or anything like that, but it's like,
I thought they didn't allow that stuff at the forest.
I saw this on another podcast, but the security there made like pre 9/11 TSA look like, you know, look like the Gestapo or something like that.
I think that, you know, there's also another licensed type of temporary marijuana event at the state. I think that the forest could probably very successfully become a marijuana event if Rothbury opted in for that.
Yeah, because it's already happening.
It's already happening, but you can just sell it there. And you can, like, that's the big difference is that you can actually have a dispo there selling products that instead of people just bringing it from home, they go, oh, shit, man, I really want some weed. I forgot it at home or something like that.
Yeah.
I can go get some in the main grounds or the entrance.
Whatever. Yeah, in the vendor area, and it'll, you know, it's going to be safe and regulated right. and tested and all the other right. stuff. Yeah.
So I think, you know, in around, you know, the events, that's another place where the guild's kind of pushing, particularly in Grand Rapids, just because Grand Rapids has taken a sort of wait and see approach to a lot of things, like lounges, like I mentioned, it's in the ordinance, but not enabled yet. And events, and we're seeing events happening all over the place. And I'm going, oh man, wouldn't it be nice here? You talked about Breakaway coming up this weekend. You know, that's awesome. You know, Breakaway is a great event. And I've talked to the Breakaway organizers, like they were saying, what can we do to make this thing a consumption event?
Yeah.
So that, because yeah, people are already smoking it.
Yeah.
Like we know it.
The cops aren't even bringing it in. We always smoke sure. a joint in front of a cop. They're not there for that. It's yeah. like, you know,
but being able to have it for sale there, that would certainly promote some local businesses perhaps.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, I think the more legitimately we can all represent the community, the better it is for the cause.
Well, and we can probably bring in some more events too for the community. Like, I know that our city leaders are concerned about making sure they have a high quality of life for everyone, and they have some concerns about what that means. But they also have concerns about economic development and tourism, and events like Breakaway. They could probably bring in many more events like Breakaway. Like the Canna Carnival is also this weekend in Muskegon. Muskegon has gone full on, you know, with cannabis, and I think to their benefit. And I think that the city leaders would probably tell you the same thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Muskegon needed it more a little bit. That's why Grand Rapids can kind of, they're still looking for tourism, but they're doing well enough that they can, they don't need to be as aggressive. And not, then you mix that in with the conservatism that kind of exists here. Like when we first got licensed, we used to have to drive out to Lowell. No offense to that place. I'm trying to think what it is out there.
There are a few. Yeah, Lowell has a bunch.
But yeah, they're the only one for a while. Months. You know, so it was like, yeah, sure, it was legal in Kent County.
Meds Cafe.
Yeah, it's legal, but like the prices were high just because there's no competition. Sure. And it wasn't exactly convenient for us who have the means to drive 25 minutes each way.
Yeah.
But some folks aren't going to be able to get it. So is it really legal if you're not making it accessible to people? And is that, that's a social
equity. I mean, those guys would have said, hey, I'll just deliver it to you.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. But, again, no offense to Meds Cafe. Oh, yeah. They were up and running doing it. But yeah. I could see that it had to have been a political wait and see approach, or, you know, kind of drag their feet.
Sure.
Because, you know, the people that are running the shit in county weren't into it yet, or whatever it was, you know.
Although Grand Rapids had a very high support for Prop 1, for example. I mean, it's one of the highest in the state.
From the voters' perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I think citywide it was like 63, 65, 67, somewhere in that percent in favor. And we see that in other communities that still haven't opted in. It's like, so why exactly? Why are you waiting so long? You know, I was actually in New Buffalo last night. New Buffalo and New Buffalo Township are going through the same thing right now. And they had similar levels of voter support in 2018. We saw Grand Haven opt in, which I never thought would happen, especially with their current mayor.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did not have the kind of support, but they still had the highest support in Ottawa County. So it's like, all right.
If it's going to happen in Ottawa, it's probably where it's got to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But we'll see with New Buffalo. We'll see with like other places around the area. Not everywhere has to opt in too. Like there was just a vote, I want to say the primaries a couple weeks ago in Meridian Township outside of Lansing.
Yeah.
That one where the voters opted in to allow adult use cannabis stores by 14 votes. Right. So razor thin margin. As like, and I actually written a letter to the editor saying, look, guys, you don't have to. Like, I'm a cannabis advocate, and you don't need to worry. The disinformation that's out there, oh, it's going to be so much crime. Oh, it's going to be so much traffic. It's going to be so much odor. All the kids are going to start using it. All that stuff was there. And I'm saying, you don't have to worry about that. Traffic is a land use impact, but that's going to go away immediately because the novelties wears off.
Like
it's just
the first month
it
might be super packed, then people are gonna get the hang of it.
We call it the Chick-fil-A effect.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And so it's crazy for a little bit, and then you go, oh yeah, okay, whatever, this isn't that special.
Yeah,
I can get this anywhere. And I also said to Meridian Township, you guys, you probably don't need that $56,000 per store of tax revenues. You don't need to have that. You don't need to have any of these 25,000 jobs that's been created in this, direct jobs in this state. That's okay. You know, not everywhere has to have them. If people want weed, they can always go to East Lansing, right next door, down to Lansing.
Where there's a bunch of them,
anywhere else that's opting in. But still Meridian voters were like, we see past this bullshit that everyone's always spewing. And we're okay with, you know, 14 votes, even when it's like a poorly worded ballot initiative.
Yeah, but of course. Yeah, I'm sure like in 5 years, once they finally get a dispensary up and running there and everyone's becomes, you know,
when the disinformation goes away and they're just fans of it, it wouldn't be 14 votes anymore if they rewrite the vote. Right. You know, it'd probably be unanimous, I feel like.
What's interesting is that, you know, I wouldn't say it's a problem with the state's framework, but it certainly makes it for a complicated framework, is that every community can opt in or opt out. And they can choose which licenses to opt in for or opt out. And they can choose medical or adult use of both. And they can choose where to allow them.
Yeah.
So it's great for a consultant like me, right? Because I can go, okay, I'll look at this ordinance and figure it out and tell you what it means. And people who are, like we were talking about earlier, with I'm just trying to run a business or I just want to grow weed, you know? Okay, well, but you don't even have to deal with ordinances because what a mess, right? So you have 1,773 communities in Michigan and 6% have opted in. Well, I should say 6% for adult use, 9% for medical. That's relatively few places in the state still that are allowing these things. Less than 100 communities for both. But they're finding that there aren't those land use impacts. The kids aren't smoking more.
Kids are already smoking.
There is zero correlation, though. This is the interesting part, is that these studies have been coming out saying, sure, there are odors from grows, but you can mitigate those with filters. Or you might drive down 131 and get a little whiff if from Flourish or something like that. Okay, but it's like, it's not permeating the atmosphere, right?
I don't see
crime impacts.
Yeah, yeah.
The traffic impacts, sure, those go up a little bit, but crime is like any other retailer. And then there's no correlation at all to proximity for youth use. It doesn't go up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, they're already smoking it. If they're going to smoke it, you know, the opportunity here is, I wouldn't say I'm arguing here for lowering the age, but it's like the kids are going to smoke it. They're going to consume it. Wouldn't you rather have them get in for the right place?
Yeah, so they're not getting shit that has fungus in it or whatever, or mites or, you know, it's like, I think we're heading that way though, at least. Thanks to your good work though.
I hope it gets normalized, you know, and it's at the end of the day, it's just another industry and we got to treat it like one. You know, there are so many rules that don't necessarily have a basis in fact, but more basis in fear. And it's like, this is not how we should be governing things.
Right.
And why are we doing it to this one? Okay, well, it's because of all this disinformation, right?
Yeah.
And where there are, it makes it really hard to figure out where are the valid concerns that we should have.
Yeah, when you're polluted with a bunch of BS all the time. Yeah.
So I'm very hopeful for the future. I think that it's going to be better. People are going to, like you said, 5 years down the road, it's just going to be another store on the street.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go to it, you don't go to it. You don't have to go to a bar. Yeah. You know, you don't have to go to any business you don't want to. Right. Fine. Except for maybe the DMV. Right. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's still a destination. It's still elective. People can go choose to go and it's not harming anyone that's not going.
So, yeah. I would think that from a party line perspective, and I don't want to make it about that, but I'm just curious, is it pretty drawn? I mean, in terms of support and non-support?
No.
It's kind of spread.
You mean across like major parties?
Yeah. I mean, I can see the libertarian folks types there. They would be for it, I would think, because you're doing your own thing. The more liberal side of people see the social inequity part of it as a big win.
Yep.
But obviously that leaves the kind of the GOP. I'm just curious, you know, and I don't mean this to be alienating to anyone listening. You're entitled to your beliefs or whatever, but it's, you know, I'm just curious.
I mean, and the Guild is nonpartisan. Yeah. Very strongly so. Like that's a big principle of ours. And we have policy meetings now and then. We have candidates show up to our member meetings.
Of both parties.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple I want to say in our June meeting we had Representative Brand, who's Republican. He showed up, Tommy Brand, and was like, look, I don't know that much about cannabis, but I want to learn. And he got a round of applause, a standing ovation from the crowd because they were like, that's awesome. Yeah. We don't necessarily agree with you on everything, but we do want
that.
We
don't have to.
But, you know, I would say the crowd is mixed, too. You know, I know several people in the organization who consider themselves Republican, conservative. You know, cannabis, that's the beauty of cannabis, is it crosses party lines. Everyone can learn to love it. What I would say is that we had I'm thinking about an event we had last fall. Senator Brinks, Winnie Brinks from State Senator Brinks from Grand Rapids, she said, you know, it's nice because she thinks the difference sort of between Democrats and Republicans are that Democrats can more openly talk about it. Republicans don't necessarily disagree or like their legislation may not necessarily reflect it, but they may not personally feel anything about it.
Yeah.
So they just can't be as open with their constituents because their constituents
yeah.
are still worried.
Yeah, and there's going to be more of an old school vibe in there. Yeah, mm-hmm. with the which those people are just have been fed disinformation. You know.
But that said, I mean, we see Republican representatives or senators and Democrats, Democratic representatives or senators. I mean, they're always making legislation, and the legislation is a mix of good and bad. You know, for the industry, harder regulations or easier regulations. It doesn't really matter who it's coming from. And we see bipartisan support of a lot of bills come through. I mean,
probably both good and both good and bad bills.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So and we talked to him. Like we had a discussion about this bill that ultimately passed, but we talked to the representative, LeGrand in this case from Grand Rapids. I said, well, what are you doing? This is going to have some unintended consequences. And he was one of the sponsors of the bill, and he ultimately voted against it.
Oh, nice.
And because we had advocates saying, wait, look at all these impacts that you didn't necessarily think about or consider when you were drafting the bill, or maybe it got added as an amendment, whatever it might be. Let's talk about this. And I mean, politicians will respond to that.
Yeah.
And often they'll recognize it immediately or say, yeah, I've thought about that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing that much, but you know, it has, you have a good basis for saying it. And so we're like, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Whether or not it passes or not.
Yeah. There's so much complexity to all these things that like when people try and really simplify, like politicians, like it's like everything they do has so many reactions. It's like some of the most well-meaning, you know, legislation can turn into the worst thing ever. You know, try to be, you know, folks, try to be more like, be a stoner and be cool. Okay.
And or half don't the politicians, you know, are probably stoners too. They just won't necessarily agree or tell you that.
Yeah, definitely.
Ever in public, you know, but.
My wife's an attorney. I know a lot of lawyers. You know.
Lawyers are a high consumer group.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying. They're I should say, that was pun intended, right? But like, I would say they're one of the larger consumer groups.
Yeah.
But they might not be the ones going into the store to get it. They might get into home delivery, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they're nervous about the stigma or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know that marijuana or cannabis law is a big kind of growing industry too, just because of the complexity of the legislation. That's an industry that is going to pop up anytime there's a new.
Oh yeah.
So, I've had some friends of ours say, "You guys should really get into that," but I don't know. It's a lot. My wife's not super into regulation, so it's
okay.
Like,
okay.
You know.
Then maybe not cannabis. You know, but we talked to folks too. It's like, if you're going to pass an ordinance, make it like something you can administer with your current staff capacity. I mean, shoot, Grand Rapids has decent capacity as far as staff goes. And we were still, when I was there, I mean, I was a de facto cannabis administrator for 3 years, maybe two and a half, 3 years. And it was hard. Like that was a lot of work. And I was basically a full-time job. I'm like, holy cow. Like,
yeah,
this is too much. I wish we had created an ordinance that was a little bit easier to administer.
Yeah.
And I see that across the board. Why are you making it so hard? Is there a real good reason? Probably not. Like,
other than unless they're trying to create barriers.
If they're trying to create barriers. And, you know, I understand too that it's a big unknown, or at least it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
To their credit, a lot of places do some pretty good research. A lot of cities, you know, they'll go out and look at more mature markets. We had a group from Grand Rapids go out to Denver and check the place out and go, okay, and talk to people. And I thought it was really sort of a thoughtful approach. And they're going to make the decisions for all kinds of reasons. But a lot of times politicians are just going, man, I want to make it something reasonable that can sort of respect the public concerns.
Yeah.
Regardless of where those are from or why people are concerned.
Yeah. Regardless.
But respects those concerns while still allowing the industry to operate. Whether or not allows the industry to thrive is a bigger question. But
So
I think I think sort of a cautious approach isn't a bad thing necessarily, but at some point you got to come back to it and say, okay, we were cautious. Was it for the right reasons? Can we make it a little bit easier now? Yeah. Or is the damage already done?
And that's my concern. Now that we see the data too. Now that you show the data, you know, like the smell, the odor thing is really funny to me because I grew up in Bay City, Michigan, which has our claim to fame for a long time was that we had the most bars per capita. We had like 85 bars and only 40,000 people or something.
Dang.
And now there's like 15 dispensaries or something as well. So they went all in as well.
They sure did.
But that's a town that has been plagued by the sugar beet factory that smells so bad. There's been like pending litigation for 40 years on this thing.
Oh man.
Or I worked in Zeeland for a while right next to a turkey farm.
Yep.
And that's far worse, you know, so like, don't tell me that like this weed smell is a problem. You know?
I think the smell of weed is lovely.
It's delicious.
I don't know. Like I walked into a grow I'm like, oh man, fresh, like on when it's before it's been harvested, especially. It's
still moist, yeah.
Oh, it just smells lovely.
Yeah.
And maybe that's biased, you know. And maybe I've gotten to, you know, maybe it's acquired taste or acquired smell, you know, but
yeah.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot worse smells out there, I think.
All right. Well, if you notice that we're in a different position than when you were last seeing us, it's only because we had some technical issues. I had a battery issue. Yeah. Continuity stuff. Okay, so first off, I've enjoyed this, Landon. It's been really informational.
It's been great.
What I'd like to do now, why don't you just select one hot button or, you know, something that's current that you're really facing now and really localize it to the Grand Rapids community. If there's an ordinance sure. or a movement or something that you're really kind of spearheading, and don't be afraid to give a lot of detail on it, you know, and kind of explain what, you know, what
I got detail.
What exactly it is that we're looking for and what we're doing, what you're trying to push and what the resistance is, I guess.
Okay. So a little background. Grand Rapids had decrim ordinance in 2012. In 2018, I want to say July 2018, the city opted in to allow the medical industry. The adult use industry wasn't enabled by the state until later, late that fall. Mm. But then following that in July 2020, I think it was, the city opted in to allow adult use too, which is a good thing because medical only ordinances are very difficult, largely because medical only companies have a very difficult time surviving.
Yeah.
We've seen that in too many places where you go, are you trying to hurt the industry? And the answer is usually yes.
Yeah, right.
But they might not tell you that. Anyway, Grand Rapids though, I think, you know, it has a lot of community support. Like I mentioned, the Prop 1 for MRTMA, the adult use.
That was 2018.
Referendum, yeah, in late 2018. Passed statewide, I want to say 55, 56%. In Grand Rapids, it was closer to 65, 66, 67, somewhere in there. I think a couple precincts were like in the 80s. Probably around here, actually, in Heritage Hill area and Midtown.
Yeah, that's right.
yeah, that was probably some of the highest in the state. Anyway, so there's good community support. Although you always will find that a lot of people will support, we call it NIMBYs in planning, not in my backyard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you'll see people support a certain land use, but then be like, yeah, but I don't really want it close to me. So
over on the other side of town.
What's that?
We can have it over on the other side.
Other side of town. I wouldn't say we got that necessarily from public, you know, average citizens as much as from the city commission. That was mostly just saying, let's create an ordinance that sort of limits the number of stores. They were mostly concerned about stores. And sort of base the whole ordinance on stores, but they also allow grows and processors and testing labs and secure transporters.
Right.
So the state licensing framework is complex. There are 20 license types, I think 13 in adult use and 8 or 7 or something in medical. And so Grand Rapids has opted in to allow most medical and adult use license types. The thing was, the ordinance is somewhat complicated because I think that the intent of the city commission when they adopted it was to limit the number without limiting the number, like limit the number by requiring spacing between from other land uses. The commissioners were often asking, how many is this going to result in? And we thought, well, probably like 30. I would say it ended up being less. But that's like, how many parcels are okay? And there are 67,000 parcels in the city. And we're like, oh, there are 1,200 parcels. They're going to be okay. And that's going to result in like 30 or 35 stores.
Yeah.
And that was the major concern. Like I said, everyone was concerned about stores. Oh, stores are going to be, these could be the opening Pandora's box, you know, so we want to approach this carefully. So what they did is they require, you know, 2,000 feet between dispensaries. They require 1,000 feet from a church. or a park, a park or public playground, or a substance use disorder program. Except those three land uses, they can have a waiver. The planning commission can give them a waiver. They can't anymore, but they could at the time. Then they also said we need 1,000 feet from a school, K-12,
yep.
Public or private. We need 1,000 feet from residential, but only along the same street face. You know, so if you turn a corner and stuff like that. So, and then they added on a youth center later on, which, and removed the possibility of waivers. youth center at the time that they adopted it was not a defined term. So no one knew what a youth center was or what this was going to mean.
It could be applied as they wanted.
It was pretty, you know, I, as a former employee and knowing several commissioners myself, I think that they're good people. And but I still think that that decision was a bad one. And, it, you know, that wasn't good governance. You know, you shouldn't, A, without knowing where your youth centers are because it's undefined use, you shouldn't start requiring separation from that.
Yeah.
And B, when there's no reason, and we've seen it again and again at the time.
Now. You have the data.
We have the
now,
data, especially. And we had it at the time saying, look, there's no correlation between youth use and proximity here. But whatever. Grand Rapids is Grand Rapids, and there are constituencies, and there are power brokers, and youth center was one thing that got added in. That's fine. Then they threw in the Clean Air and Public Places Ordinance that prohibits consumption of anything, any cannabis, anywhere basically, but that's a different story too. So the ordinance itself was pretty restrictive. And at the time we thought we could have, like I said, probably 35 stores. And I think we're going to end up with about 25. And for all intents and purposes, there are no more opportunities in the city.
So it's locked out.
For a standalone store because of the latest roundup ordinances where they added youth center. And that also makes it very difficult for an operator, even an existing operator, because if they're suddenly, basically if the rules change so that now their property is would no longer be eligible.
Move. Yeah.
Well, they can't, they don't have to move, but if they want to expand or change anything about it, they can't legally anymore because the rules changed on them. So they have to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals, which is a whole process, a lot of money. And it's like, are we really trying to make this easier or not?
Yeah.
So Grand Rapids had a fairly restrictive ordinance. We're trying to this is the question of what's the guild doing about it. We're trying to change it. We're trying to lessen the ordinance a bit. Just sort of relax, I would say, some of the rules, because we know that place is locked out now. We have interest in people for micro businesses. They do allow micro businesses. That was one of the changes too, except it's a fairly restrictive allowance for micro businesses as well. Mm-hmm. Micro business being like 150 plants, processing and retail all in the same store.
And that's pretty small. Do we have any micro businesses here?
No, I'm aware of a couple that are trying to start. The state recently changed the rules to allow a class A micro business, which is 300 plants, no processing and retail, and you can sell your products to like different places and carry other products.
Yeah.
So it's meant to be more viable. And I think it will be.
Yeah.
But the city doesn't allow that still because they're like, well, it's not a micro business. This is a class A micro business.
Right.
They're not the same. So, okay, we'll change the rules then to allow a class A micro business. And why are we nitpicking on this?
Yeah.
But that's a different story too.
Of course.
So, we're trying to bring in, I'd say, four new license types, being the class A micro business, the designated consumption establishment, the consumption lounge, temporary marijuana events. I want to stop seeing these events go elsewhere. I mean, they're going to West Michigan, you know, and the guild covers West Michigan. So we're happy to see them going to Muskegon.
Yeah, it'd be cool in GR too, though.
Yeah, it'd be great to in GR, you know, and folks like Breakaway say the same thing or Upheaval and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we're trying to bring in medical education and research licenses too. I don't necessarily think that the city commission is going to have any problem with any of these, but they're going to want to make sure that there's been public engagement. they're going to want to make sure they understand the data, and that it basically that we're presenting a good case and that we have good public support. So we're building that. We have some events coming up. We're going to sort of kick off the campaign this year, hoping to bring an ordinance to the city as soon as next January,
2023.
Yep, because we have a lot of events who have been calling me, calling others on the board going, when is this going to happen in Grand Rapids? We want to come to your city and do our events. We want to have a cannabis culinary festival. We want to have Breakaway with consumption. We want to have a lounge. We want to have, you know, the rooftop deck where you're not going to get arrested if you light up.
Yeah.
we want to change the Clean Air and Public Places ordinances. It's too restrictive. You know, it doesn't allow it basically. I know the intent was to sort of match what the state was doing, but it went too far. It went too far with where you can consume legally or not consume legally, with what you can consume. Like I said, edibles have no place in the Clean Air Ordinance.
Yeah.
So looking at changing that. We've heard several stores talk about, hey, could you allow drive-thrus? We allow drive-thrus for McDonald's, but you know, that's where some of the disinformation. Well, someone's just going to eat it as soon as they start driving.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They might do that anyway if they're doing curbside or they can go into a store
and get and in walk the car out
and do it. But you, we don't have really data to back it up.
Yeah. But I mean, people, there's drive through liquor stores.
There are drive through liquor stores, although not in Grand Rapids.
Right.
But you know, it's like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And what's the problem? Do we really want to make these poor dispo employees walk out in the rain to give you your paper bag that's getting soaked? Or wouldn't it be easier just to pull up to a drive through? You know, things like that might have initially, or make it a special land use, you know, have the public process where you have to go through to the planning commission, have a public hearing, all that stuff. That makes sense. So we're just sort of trying to relax the rules enough to make it reasonable. I would love to see some lessening of these separation distances personally, I think.
Yeah. Especially in light of the proximity is that data.
You know, You know, I understand concerns for youth and schools and stuff like that, playgrounds. Fine. If people are worried about that, even though the data does not support the proximity,
you can concede that still, yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Church? What exactly is going on here? You know, and which is funny because, and the church thing is problematic to me for several reasons. Number one, when there still were waivers allowed, churches were coming to us asking, how much am I supposed to charge these guys? You don't charge them anything. What are you talking about? Well, we need a new roof. And if they want this waiver so bad, and like people were talking about opening churches so they could get essentially bribe the cannabis companies. I'm like, something's wrong here, right?
They're already not paying taxes, churches.
They're already not paying taxes.
Yeah.
You know,
they shouldn't have any say at all, frankly.
Well, whatever, they have say. and that's fine. And that's part of Grand Rapids. But it's like, my big issue is that it sort of unnecessarily butts the industries together. I shouldn't necessarily reserve for the church as an industry, but oops.
Yeah.
But, you know, why are we having churches and cannabis automatically adversarial based on this ordinance when churches aren't necessarily adversarial? And I'm going to say that very publicly. Churches aren't adversarial to cannabis, not by definition. There are many churches who are.
Yeah.
I don't quite know why. And I've talked to enough pastors and deacons and priests and whoever and rabbis and imams who have said, we don't really have a personal problem with cannabis, but it's the same kind of thing. But our constituents do and our congregations are concerned about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we want to be careful with that. And maybe a separation is okay. We don't want someone walking across the street and coming into our church high. Like, what? There's some logic breakdown, but there is always a logic breakdown when it comes
to
cannabis.
That's the only way you're going to get me into a church, by the way.
So I'd like to consider that pretty strongly. I don't know if that's going to be a big push from the guild this year to try to change the separation distances.
Yeah.
We certainly want to open up more opportunities.
Yeah.
The city has also had a lot of, I think, really good discussions about social equity. I've said it before, but, you know, I think the social equity plan, the intents are good. The city wants to help provide more opportunities, especially for people of color. You know, people of color have gotten shit on from the war on drugs for 50 years. And it's like, maybe this is a way we can start to address those wrongs.
Yeah.
I just feel like, yeah, if everyone wants to get to that point of let's address these historical wrongs, we're just disagreeing on how to do it. And my perspective is, if you really want to help people get into the industry, don't make it harder to get in the industry by putting all these commitment like requirements onto the industry, which is what happened.
Right.
And you know, at the time I thought it was the right move. Now I don't. And that's just because I've had more experience.
You
in
learn
the
more.
Now.
Yeah.
There's learn more. And I think the city is learning more too, but that's still their sort of major, I think, goal is making sure that there's some social equity or they can increase social equity in the industry.
Yeah.
but they're working through that right now. Like, they just had a discussion last week where they're saying, okay, we're going to bring a new policy to determine how can we help cannabis companies meet those commitments they already made if they're having trouble making them right now.
Yeah.
Or can't or won't. There's a whole narrative there too. Like we're saying, oh, they're just not even worrying about it. It's like, that's not the case though. You know, you talk to enough operators and I work with them as a consultant too. And I see their books and I'm going, they're trying, man. Like they're trying
they're
to hire
money. Yeah.
You know, they're trying to hire locals. They're trying to work with local businesses. They're having, you know, they're doing what they said they were going to do. They're just having trouble meeting the exact letter. This is not a reason to shut down a company.
Right.
And that was what was happening. They were getting this close. Like the state, a couple licensees were about to get shut down and only were able to stay open because they filed a action at the state to get an immediate stay of this order to shut down. I'm going, is this really what we're trying to do?
Yeah.
Are you trying to shut down a business? I'll use Flourish, for example. They were in an article last week saying just that.
Yeah.
They were having trouble meeting one of their points. And the city sent the state a non-renewal notice saying that they didn't meet their commitments, so we're not going to renew them. And the state said, okay, we're not going to renew your license. But without any real like understanding of what was going on, I'm thinking, Flourish, that facility in town, I think, employs 200, 300 people.
I like that facility too.
You know, yeah. I mean, some people are going to be like, I would say, especially locally in the industry, you have this sort of, not even locally, but statewide, you have this big company, little company stress and tension. There's always going to be that.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's a whole reason for that sort of battle.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's say, regardless, you like Farmhouse, you like Flourish. Doesn't matter to me. Like, they're growing weed, they're providing jobs, they're doing what they're supposed to do. You know, that's fine. If we're going to shut someone down, we just got to make sure we're doing it for the right reasons. Are they actually causing some sort of public health issue?
Yeah.
You know,
and is there intent too?
Is there intent? Yeah. And if they're making a good faith effort, let's respect that.
Yeah.
And if they're not making a good faith effort, that's where I think you got to drop the hammer. But it's really hard to make that judgment.
Yeah.
So Grand Rapids is kind of a, it's a big one. And there's a lot of issues going on. The guild is going to try to bring in more licenses, essentially try to make more opportunities for locals. I think we have a good opportunity, especially for some of those license types I mentioned.
Yeah.
Because those weren't in the law. They weren't in MRTMA, which is very difficult. Michigan recreational. Man, I used to know all acronyms by heart.
But MRTMA, that's like the one that made it.
MRTMA is the one that allows the adult use industry statewide.
Yeah.
So, but those license types, the lounge, the event, class A micro, medical education and research, those aren't in law. So they're sort of administrative licenses that were created. So I think we have a lot more opportunity as a city and the city leaders, I think, to maybe play some more, put some more opportunities with social equity onto those license types, particularly like micro businesses or lounges.
Yeah. Where there's less of a barrier to entry. Or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the commissioners are on board. Cool. We just need to get an ordinance before them and have them vote yes on it.
Well, I have a friend from Electric Forest who I met that did 5 years in Massachusetts State Prison for gummy bears 3 months before it became legal in Massachusetts.
Oh, man.
Or just before it was already medically, I don't know, whatever, it was close to then. And because of that, he did his time, whatever, he's cool with it. But because of that, he's now considered like a victim of the war on drugs in Massachusetts. And now he has like, if he wants to apply for a license, he gets like all the way automatically up to the top. He has all these extra benefits and advantages because of the fact that he was kind of wronged from it, you know? Yep. So when you think about the war on drugs against the people of color and all that, like people are going to complain and call it affirmative action or whatever, but those are the only people that never had to deal with being disadvantaged by it. You know, it's like,
and to their credit, I think like the state and local governments are doing that with their social equity policies. They'll sort of, maybe not reward, but recognize that if you have a past record that's about something that's legal now, maybe that shouldn't count against you.
Yeah.
And in fact, it might help you. So the state, like, they'll lower your license fees, your annual licensing fees, get you ahead in the line. Your process will go a little faster.
Yeah.
We've seen some of the things there. And so I think that's a good thing. It may not matter. You know, that may not be the most effective, but that maybe the state's own good faith effort as trying to do something that they can, even if it doesn't make that much difference, it's making a difference. So,
well, when you think about a city like Grand Rapids, if we're going to end up at 25 dispensaries and we're going to be locked in there basically because of the proximity requirements or the distances, you know, then there is no more opportunity in it.
Right.
Right. And so the city continues to grow, and is 25 enough to support? Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's room for 50 here, you know, but like, it can't really be a true free, you know, people always talk about capitalism, let the invisible hand work.
It's not a free market.
That's not what it is at that point, you know? Right. So
it's interesting. You know, I think that there's, damn it, you're editing. I just lost it again. Just talking about 25. That was where it's
25 stores, and there's room more. Yeah.
So your point about like 25 stores in Grand Rapids, maybe that's enough, maybe it's not. You know, there are going to be opportunities where people can buy a store. Ownership changes hands all the time. That's actually been a social equity issue, is like, they wanted to have so much resident ownership. When I was on staff, it was going, okay, well, that's not going to really matter after you apply, because people are going to move and you're going to get investments and your ownership, you know, percentages and stuff might change. I love the idea of resident ownership, but we got to face business reality.
Yeah.
Since that time, actually, We've had some weird fights with that, where the city is not currently taking that view and saying, no, you said you're going to have residential status here for 3 years. You got to have So I have a client who they got investment. They were a small business. They got investment, and suddenly their ownership stake was diluted. And now they're down below that number, even though people still live in the city, but yeah. They have out of town investors. It's like, are you going to shut them down for that? Really? Yeah. So it's little things like that that can add up and make it difficult.
Yeah.
But moving in the right direction. People are sort of recognizing the value. We got the guild being active, trying to do what it can to make the industry and how you get into it easier.
Well, so. As consumers, we appreciate it, you know, but sure. I think for people listening and watching, why don't you explain how to get involved? Yeah. You know, what are some upcoming events here? You sure. brought some t-shirts. That logo is awesome. Yeah. I love the logo. This, yeah. So it's the mitten holding the joint, yeah. And the smoke mitten is the UP. Joint.
Yep. it's our most popular t-shirt. We have a sort of much more,
like this,
you know, the logo is much more, you know,
formal
and sort of genteel, but we're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's the one you hand out to the politicians. Exactly. This is the one you hand out to the constituents. Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, the guild's been around. We're, I would say, getting much more active as far as events. We've always hosted like policy events, stuff like that. We did some webinars last year, with like CRA director Brisbo and stuff, and we bring in politicians. I think that the best way is to, I mean, just get involved and show up to a meeting. Like, yeah. we're having meetups, starting, we have one coming up on September 7th in Muskegon, No Name Saloon, that you don't have to be a member to show up. It's just like cannabis industry meetup. You show up, hang out, talk to people, get connected. We're going to do another one in Kalamazoo in October 5th. We have member meetings for people. I mean, it's $25 a year.
Yeah. $2 a month.
It's not too much of a lift, and you usually get it right back as far as when you get discounts, you get a bunch of swag, you get, there are a lot of benefits to being a member, and like, we should really be raising our prices, but we haven't
get on now while you can.
Right.
Folks.
Yeah. Do it right now. our next member meeting is September 21st at Mitten Brewing up on Leonard Street here in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we usually fill a room there, and I know that upstairs room can't hold that many people, but anyone who wants to show up can show up. You don't, for the September 21st meeting, you don't have to be a member. Although you're probably not going to get a gift you're not a member, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You can also join right there, to get that gift.
Get that gift. Want. Yeah. High mm-hmm. pressure. Yeah.
But we have, like I said, business, networking meetings, or events. We have field trips. We're starting to work on different sort of creative ways of sort of bringing in the local stores. If you show up and you flash your card, maybe you get something, some kind of coupon that day.
That's cool.
We have big plans for the future. But right now, the big push for the guild is getting members, welcoming people, saying, yeah, you're part of it, or you want to be part of it. This is a big tent. You can come. You can hang out and meet these really cool people. Cannabis parties are the best parties, man. I mean, they're good, you know, and we don't have consumption events yet. We do have member sessions now and then.
Yeah.
at private residence.
If anyone ever wants to come to the attic, right. I'm down. Yeah.
Maybe we'll have an attic session these days.
Yeah, for sure.
Because private residence is legal to consume.
Yeah.
We've talked about doing things like infused dinners. We have a lot of interest in that. We've had a lot of interest from hotels and venues and bars and restaurants in town, because they're going, boy, wouldn't it be cool to let our guests consume legally in our hotel if they want to? Wouldn't it be great if we could serve our customers an infused dinner if they want it? Wouldn't it be great if, maybe not bars. We've had interest in bars, but they're mostly going, hey, can we be a lounge too?
Yeah.
You can't really mix alcohol and weed. Not yet. Yeah. And crossfitting is never that great of an idea, but yeah, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah. You can't fight for everything, because some of it's not necessarily the right.
No,
yeah,
we're, yeah. And then, like I said, you know, we're looking out for data. You know, we're not out there going cannabis at every step, high THC all the way. No, yeah. We're not saying go off and get high and go drive. We're not saying go crossfade by mixing.
Yeah.
You know, be a cool, normal consumer. Like, everyone, you know this, and people are going to make mistakes and stuff. But we're trying to help people not, you know, and that's part of the thing with the guild too, is like the politics and the regulations are so Byzantine. You know, there's so much going on. How do you possibly keep track of it all? The guild, honestly, we have capacity and we can't keep track of it all.
Right.
We have a current issues page. We had too much on there, so we split up to a federal, state, and local. And, you know, we put as much as we can on there.
And you're still missing stuff.
But we're still missing stuff. And we say, hey, if you know stuff that we don't have on here, we want to know about it, like, let us know.
Yeah, that's a call to action to folks listening and watching. To some degree, I mean, the only way to affect change is to be involved.
Yeah.
You know, and that, whether that's for cannabis or for your local school or whatever the F it is. Yep. And the only way to get a lobbying group to the point where it can be highly powerful is to have it be large. So absolutely. If you're bitching about the cannabis industry in Grand Rapids or West Michigan, pay $25, you know, a year and
or if you're a become a number. Student,
yeah.
It's free. Free. You gotta have a .edu email address and tell us when you're going to graduate. But it's like, we want you to be involved, and you know, and if you're in the industry, you want to be in the industry, just show up to a meeting, check it out.
Yeah.
You're going to have fun. You pay for it for a year and it's gonna come back to you.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Do it now before we raise our rates and stuff.
Yeah, that's
probably,
right.
Probably January. But also, yeah, like you said, I mean, the world is run by people who show up, right? And it's the squeaky wheels. That is so frustrating as city staff too, because they go, oh, what is this guy doing in the city commission? And they're listening to him because he's here, right?
Oh, that
pissed me off. And it doesn't have to be whatever it is. It can be anything.
Yeah.
But I'm going, man, just because he showed up, he has a more powerful voice already.
Right.
What we do is not only like lobbying. We're not lobbyists. We're a political advocacy group. It's a nonprofit. We have a PAC. The PAC is sort of its own thing. The organization though is so much more. But you're absolutely right. Like, we only really get power when we have numbers.
Yeah.
And we know that people are out there. We know they're interested. And stoners are still, they can still do stuff. You know, you're not stuck to your couch. It's still easy to just open your phone.
I remember there was a Simpsons one time where I don't know if you remember this, but it was about the big vote. They're trying to get it passed, and like the day came and like everyone,
they just forgot to go, right?
They forgot to go.
Were we supposed to vote?
Oh shit, something? It was today. Yeah, they all like got together for a big rally like the day, right? After the election or something.
Actually, I mean, there is that, you know.
Yeah, to some degree.
We were joking because I got to the wrong street here. And classic stoner move.
He came to the wrong house.
Wrong house. I surprised this poor woman who came on our porch and was like, hi.
I guess I could interview you.
Right? I figured it out, though. And I'm not stoned. I wasn't then either.
No.
But, you know, we joke that you can join when you're high. You can donate to the PAC when you're high.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not even going to ask you. We do ask, like, when people... you know, sign up for some members or like member events, especially will say like, hey, check these boxes to show that they actually read it. And things like, I'm going to be cool and not say the location of this, you know, member only event, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we'll say, hey, do you know what time it is? You know, in California, it's 4:20 there. It's 7:20 here, you know, little things like that. Just to sort of keep people on their toes. Were you high when you were doing this? People check that all the time. Yes, I was high when I registered.
Of course.
Maybe they're joking, but I'm going, it doesn't matter, you know, when you're high, you can still think, you can still do stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Don't go drive. You can still join the guild when you're high. You can still donate to the PAC when you're high. You can make a difference when you're high.
But right? To those of you that are concerned about people being high and driving around, that's a valid concern.
Yep.
But take it from someone who smokes a lot. It's not the most inspiring. Like when we smoke, we generally like to hang out and be creative and talk, not necessarily get in our car and drive around.
Right.
You know, that's more of a drunk thing to do.
Exactly.
So like, if you focus on the drunk drivers before you worry about the high drivers.
And if you want to go to Kalkushka and check out a lounge, we got you.
Yeah, there's a
bus.
Got
a field trip coming up on September 21st.
Yeah.
SmokingSafari.com.
Go to the links down in the show notes. Landon, I appreciate you coming up. I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thanks,
it's really cool.
Me,
it's crazy that there's great. Things that you know, this is highly illegal activity that we're talking about 3-4 years ago.
Right.
And now there's a guild and people, you know, it's being normalized. That's a great thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so I appreciate you and we'll definitely become members and we'll see you at an event for sure.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.